Mo.
Loud.
Ho. Mo.
Loud. It started. It started now.
It started.
It's hey, working. Everybody. Welcome to... this is Homolab 52.
Wow. Almost as old as you, Balin.
That's nice. That's Lucio. I'm Balin. And we have the lovely... It's not Amy LeMay. She's gone for 2 months.
We got rid of her.
Yeah.
Did you kill her?
Yes.
We didn't kill her. She's carefully secured somewhere.
She's ensconced in France at the moment for the whole of July.
Okay.
But we are very lucky to have the lovely Rosie Wilby.
Hooray!
Hey, Rosie Wilby. So,
hey,
come on, tell us about yourself. Who are you? What do we need to know?
Oh, goodness. Where shall I start? Well, I'm a comedian, a former singer-songwriter. I do a gay show on Resonance as well.
Good old Resonance. We all like Resonance.
And I suppose I've met Amy around and about over the years. Many years ago, I came and sang a live song to her on BBC London. And we hooked up again most recently. We were doing a gig together in Bristol, at Pride Bristol, about a year ago.
Oh, yeah.
And we caught up then, and she saw me doing my stand-up set. And it was a really, really fun night. So, yeah, I heard from her the other week to see if I wanted to stand in for her on this. And
here you are.
Here I am.
Well, we're honoured to have you.
I've got a question. What came first, the music or the stand-up?
Well, I was a musician for many, many years. I was, you know, rather earnest lesbian with my acoustic guitar.
Were you kind of Katie Lang-esque?
Well, it wasn't like comedy song.
It was proper singer-songwriting.
Very serious, romantic, wistful love songs. I had an album out, about 10 or 12 years ago now. And, you know, we got some really lovely reviews. I played with my band at Ronnie Scott's and Glastonbury and lots of festivals and things. And
so you have performed on the stage at Glastonbury?
Well, it wasn't the main stage.
The main stage, the pyramid stage.
It wasn't the pyramid.
So you were the headliner at the pyramid stage at Glastonbury?
Yeah. It's great the way people twist things, don't they? But no, we were on... It was a really fun stage called the Left Field stage, which was still really big, actually. It was still really good.
That's so, a political one.
Yeah, it is quite political, yes. So... after my band all kind of split up and I was playing solo, and I thought, I don't want to just be a sort of kind of earnest lesbian with a guitar playing my folk songs. And I suppose I decided just to spice things up a bit by telling some stories, and not really jokes, but just sort of being funny and chatting to the audience in between songs. And people started coming and saying, oh, we like you, Rosie, because not only do we get your songs, but you're funny in between as well. And then people started saying that more and more, and said, oh, why don't you have a go at comedy? And I entered a couple of stand-up comedy competitions without really knowing what I was doing, and did really well and got through to the later stages. And then in 2006, I got through to the final of something called Funny Women.
Yeah, because we were comparing something the other day,
yes.
And there was some semi-finalists that had just made it through to the finals of Funny
Women.
Actually,
I was comparing one of their heats just recently, and so I was in the final of that, and I thought, I better maybe start actually doing some more comedy gigs, and it really went from there.
And now you're doing this?
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, listen, we've got loads to talk about in Homolab this week. Obviously, we have to discuss. Well, what was worried to be a debacle of London Pride 2012, but actually, depending on who you talk to, turned out to be quite a good political London Pride. So we're going to talk about
that.
You've also got, already you're coming to the table with goods. You've got an interview with David Bedella coming up. He's currently starring in Torch Song Trilogy.
That's right.
At the Mini A Chocolate Factory. So we're going to have a chat, or you had a chat with him.
I did.
So we're going to hear about that. And then, of course, we've got all of our news from our friends at Gay Star News. So should we start with Pride? Did you go to Pride, Rosie?
I went along and I sort of got myself a little vantage point on Regent Street, and I watched the march go by for about an hour or so, and I was waving to various friends and groups that were marching. And I was really, really impressed, because I was so worried that it was going to be really, really tiny. Mm. And I was going to march, but my girlfriend refused to march. She's not really into it anymore. And so I thought, I'm just going to go and support, and maybe I'll join in if it's really small, and, you know, wave my placard as well. But I was really heartened to see how big it was, how many different amazing groups there were.
Yeah, we were really surprised.
It seemed like it was bigger than normal.
And I think the whole thing of not having floats and not having cars, it kind of worked quite well, don't you?
It kind of made it more political in a way, because normally when there's all the floats, all you hear is like blaring Lady Gaga or Kylie, and you can't really hear anything else.
And it's very party, isn't it? Yeah. Whereas I got that kind of goosebumpsy feeling that I've not had since my very, very first Pride when I was 21 in like the early 90s. And when I was first coming out, I first held my girlfriend's hand in the street and felt that huge sense of community and that I wasn't alone. And I actually felt that again.
Yeah, it felt really, time. I mean, it had a really nice vibe to it. We marched with Equity, UK, yeah. And then we kind of got to Trafalgar Square and we kind of pulled over to the side and
watched the rest
with Timberlina and kind of watched the rest of the parade go by. We should talk about what happened to us on the South Bank.
Oh, which homophobic kind of, abuse.
Yeah. Well, I was.
This is on the day. Yeah. This was on the day before, or 2 days before Pride.
It's the day the Shard opened, you know, when they had the big kind of
really laser show.
That didn't impress. And we were all out for that, and we just had a little bit of like grief from me and Lucio and a friend of ours had some homophobic grief from some teenage girls on the South Bank. And you know, it wasn't anything that scarred us or anything like that. It just kind of reminded us like, oh, they felt like it was okay to scream faggot at us over and over again. Wow. You know, on a very busy London kind of cultural South Bank,
the South Bank
center,
yeah,
you know,
the last place and, you would expect.
And then you kind of remember that that guy Ian Banyan,
Bainham.
who was killed in Trafalgar Square, was killed by a bunch of teenage girls. So it kind of got us thinking, and we were like, do you know what? That's not cool. So we're going to go march. So that's kind of, I mean, Lucio was always going to march. I was kind of like your girlfriend. I was like, oh, I don't know about that. But after that happened, I thought, no, we're going to go march. So we went and did that. Timberlina came down and, you know, all of those, the veterans of the 1972, the original Pride March, did you see them at all?
I saw
some. That was
some,
really touching.
Yeah, I did see some of them. I mean, obviously, I guess being no vehicles, some people who were, you know, really immobile were perhaps not able to go, which is a shame. But I read that some people were going to take shopping trolleys, but I didn't see any of those. I thought that would have been funny.
There was a few people pushing around various sound systems or cycling.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there was some club from, like, Milton Keynes who really turned it out. Like, they had, like, properly thought it through.
Yeah.
And they had the Kylie pumping, and they brought loads of people from their club in Milton. But anyway, the point is, it was just a really lovely vibe. It was really nice, and it was really heartening to see that Soho was completely taken over by gays after, apparently, Boris and Westminster Council didn't want that to happen at all. So it was a bit like people power.
Worried about the gaybri that we leave behind, which is the debris left
is that
by
really?
Gays.
Because
they just
send around the street cleaners. That can't be a big issue. I think there was a bit of a to and fro, wasn't there? You've got an email between Peter Tatchell and between the mayor's office, and Tatchell was saying that the mayor or the mayor's office or people in the Metropolitan Police or wherever didn't want Pride to become this huge, I guess, Madrid-style event. The reason why they said was that they were frightened of it being another love parade. Now, if you remember on the love parade, that was where a whole lot of people got crushed.
Yeah, but they got, I mean, which is a horrible thing, but the love parade's been running for how long? And of course, you know, there was a tragedy, which was awful, but that's just down to poor planning that year. That doesn't mean that the whole thing should be scrapped, does it?
No, but I'm just putting forward that
that was their argument.
And I do think I think that really there is this culture in Britain, especially, that health and safety is, you know, everyone's always very scared about what will happen and tries to avoid anything bad happening. Now, we've been in Brazil. Not in Brazil. We've been in Madrid.
I was like, when were we in Brazil?
Well, that was the other guy.
Oh, never took me to Brazil.
Beleno. We've been in Madrid, and Madrid Pride is insane. I mean, you just can't move down the streets, but they still manage to drive trucks with blaring sound systems through the crowd.
Yeah.
And no one really seems to...
Well, there's that thing, isn't it? You know, like where they're doing that mixed use lane in Kensington where it's open to traffic and cars and vehicles and there's no lights and all that. And they've shown that actually works better. So I think when you take away this ridiculous health and safetiness, people kind of take care of themselves, don't they?
You look after yourself. And if it's too busy, maybe leave. But then I think, I don't know.
This Pride didn't have like the multitudes of security firms that they wanted to have in Soho Square.
There were a lot of people.
And everybody was totally fine. You know, everybody was like,
I kind of,
no.
Well, do you know what? I kind of preferred Soho Square without the blaring music this year.
You get on, aren't you?
Well, maybe I am, but people just sat down and they were drinking and they were, you know, doing whatever and chatting. It still felt like Pride.
More like the Pride, probably.
The old Prides that we were meant to be commemorating anyway, 40 years ago when they did their first ever one.
And to tell you the truth, maybe I am getting old, but I don't miss the Hard House.
No,
it all sounds the same. It really does, you know.
But you know what? It was
generic Pride gay music.
It was just
the same thing.
I had a really lovely day, and it was really nice to see all sorts of people out as well, and people that you wouldn't expect to be political, you know, in the days, in the run-up to Pride, were really busy on their Facebook and their Twitter trying to get more people to come out in March for the right reasons.
Yes.
And that felt really, really good. And then we went to Ducky that night.
Oh, it was amazing.
It was amazing, but it pissed down all. And they had the whole outdoor section, and they gave out eco ponchos.
Yeah.
And after a few drinks, you don't care, but it just was relentless, really.
Do you know what? I loved how organized they were, that they had eco ponchos to give out. I mean, that's kind of why I love Ducky. So it's double the capacity. It was really busy, but it was great, great fun. And they had a stage outside and stage inside, and two of our favorite Twitterati people were there.
Oh, yeah. do you know who Grace Dent and Caitlin Moran are?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yes,
right.
Yeah. If you don't, look them up on Twitter and follow them. They're hilarious. They're journalists and they write columnists and da 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 da. But we were squeezing through Ducky when we first got there, and there were just these two girls who look like straight girls turned loose in a gay bar, you know, like hands over their head, dancing like it was the end of the world. And it was then, like, in each other's face, screaming along to, like, Saint Etienne or whatever it was. So, oh, God. So what did you do that night?
What did I do that night? Well, I was actually on BBC London on Catherine Landry's Lady Lamb show. But I did talk about Pride.
Okay, so you were fighting the fight.
I was waving the Pride flag.
Well, listen, that's what we think about London Pride. I think we agreeing that it was a rousing success.
Absolutely.
A rousing success. So we'd love to know if you were there, what you thought. We are at Homolab on Twitter.
Somebody's actually got in touch. Julian Vigo, because we were talking about Pride, obviously, last week.
The debacle.
He says that Pride needs to be transformed into something relevant. Many are tired of the gay ghetto it creates. Let's start Love Parade for all people. So he's talking about doing Love Parade. I think it's important, you know, LGBT, QRSTU, BWXYZ space, it's important that we just out in force.
I think it's
do
important.
Love Parade as well.
It's important to still have a message. Surely the whole point why it sort of got a bit too big and meaningless was that it was like Christmas, you know, because it gets over commercialised, the meaning starts to get lost. I mean, I like the sound of, you know, the Pride marches. Sort of before I used to go, they used to have a very specific agenda, about the age of consent, or, you know, maybe now we should be really talking about equal marriage, or, you know, having a particular issue that we sort of go and hand in a petition about, which is what they used to do, that kind of thing. I think if we've got a really set agenda that this is actually what we're saying now, as well as if we're here, we're proud.
Do you know how I know it was political this year? Is that I didn't even think about my outfit. I just wore a t-shirt and some jeans. You know, I didn't think, like, what am I wearing to the Pride Parade?
Wasn't it meant to be rainbow colours? Like, people hadn't done that strictly. But a friend of mine who was going to march, she was wearing, she was in the green section. She didn't have anything green.
She was wearing blue.
She was like, we've got red.
Oh, I didn't know about
that. Maybe that wasn't that official.
One section on the Pride march was interesting. Asexual Pride.
Oh, yeah, there was asexual Pride, which I thought...
What were they wearing?
Well,
and lots of clothes.
Suits of armour. Plastic body sheeting.
Yeah, I mean, all God's children were there.
That's what's great.
But it's interesting, I read their flyer. I still didn't quite understand, but, you know, I'm happy that they were there. So there we go. That is Pride. And as I said, we'd love to hear what you thought about it. If you were in London, or even if you weren't, you know, what did you think about it? What did you hear about it? We are at Homolab on Twitter. And now we should probably have our big star interview, Rosie. Do you want to tell us all about this?
Well, yes, Torchlight Trilogy is on at the moment at the Menier Chocolate Factory. And a couple of people who worked with me on my show on Resonance went to see it and absolutely loved it. I mean, most of the reviews have been really good. I suppose some people perhaps think some of the concerns in it are quite dated, sort of coming out to your mum and getting acceptance of being gay. But I think,
although that still happens,
we still have those huge struggles. God, I went out with a woman for 5 years who couldn't come out to her parents.
Really?
Hugely destructive to the relationship. So I think all those concerns are still massively current. So obviously David Bedella stars in the lead role, which was taken by Harvey Fierstein in the original production.
Now, I've heard that he does the voice.
Oh, the voice?
Because, you know, Harvey Fierstein has a very specific gravelly voice. I've heard that David does the voice. But I suppose it's one of those roles that it's so associated with the person who originally did it.
It's quite difficult shoes to step into.
Yeah, like anybody who does Audrey in Little Shop of Horrors does a lisp and talks like a little girl, I suppose.
Well, our reviewer who reviewed it for us sort of said that, you know, because they went to see it on one of the very first nights, and they could sort of see him thinking his way through it just in the opening monologue, which I think is quite a challenging one. But then he just really sailed with it and really, really got into it. So I went to meet him to find out about how he got the part and just find out about his career.
Excellent. So here we go.
Hello, hello.
It's great to meet you.
Thank you.
What are we interrupting at the moment? Do you have a pre-show regiment? Do you have a routine?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, all of the days lately seem to be filled with an interview or a photo session or something like that, which is very exciting, but also slightly draining. You have to cram all of that in and then get to the gym so that the body can keep from falling as rapidly as it does. and then get to work and do the vocal warm-up. And we tend to go over certain scenes downstairs before we get up here.
Okay.
Just to get our brains back into the cycle of the show. So, yeah, the days are full and busy and very satisfying.
Pretty packed.
Yeah.
And how did you get this role in the show? How did that come about?
Gosh, I'm not sure I know.
Oh.
I got a phone call from my agent one day who said, we've just been sent the script to Torch Song Trilogy. Are you familiar with it? And my heart about stopped.
Okay.
Because I am very familiar with it. I thought, wow, if this is what I think it is, I'm really excited. And it all happened really quickly. I then was on a phone call with Douglas Hodge, who said, can you come in and we'll have a meeting? Which is a lovely thing. You know, you reach a certain point in your career where you stop doing what you call quote-unquote auditions, and you start being brought in for meetings.
Okay.
So it's you and the director sitting.
You mean because they really want you, so they're not seeing lots of people.
It's less of a matter of you having to prove that you are talented initially.
They
it's
know
more,
your track record.
They understand what your history is. They've seen your CV. They know you're capable of this. Let's talk and see if we're on the same page. What are your thoughts about the script? What are your thoughts about what we can do with this? So we did a lot of that, lots and lots of discussion. And by the end of a one-hour session together, they offered me on the spot the role.
Wow.
Which has never happened to me in my whole career.
Exciting.
So I thought, hey, I must be right for this.
Yes. Well, when things come together like that, it's often a really good sign.
Yeah. Very
funny. And had you come across Douglas Hodge before? Had you seen him when he was in La Cage aux Folles here?
I did not see him in La Cage, but I certainly know of him. And I had watched quite a few things on YouTube. You know, you can see all kinds of performances on YouTube, things you shouldn't be able to.
But, some of them pop up just randomly.
Yes, they really do. But I had seen him do a Pinter, Harold Pinter tribute at the National, and I was just blown away by him. I mean, his attention to detail in the text is beyond anybody right now. I just think he's at the top of his field.
Wow.
And so to have the opportunity to come in and meet with him and then work with him, wow, just brilliant.
Absolutely brilliant. And how do you sort of relate to your character? Do you find sort of some of the concerns are still current today? I mean, obviously, you know, it's set in the 70s and 80s.
But listen, there is so much still going on today with the oppression of the marginalized. That is not anything that's going away anytime soon. I had several conversations that were pointing this fact up to me. You know, I had a friend who got into a taxi just this week.
Yeah.
And he had just come from, he's a lawyer. He had just come from a meeting where they were discussing politically what the gay marriage laws are and how they're affecting people making decisions today.
Yeah.
And he just decided he would ask the cab driver about his views.
I will never ask a cab driver.
The cab driver literally said, I think they should all be shot. And he said, are you serious? Are you trying to make me laugh or are you serious? And he said, I think gay people should be shot. And he went on to list all of the reasons why he felt we were such a threat to the community. And at one point, my friend said, you need to pull the taxi over because I'm either going to sue your ass or do something worse. So that's just one example of probably four or five I've had in the last month of people who are still suffering oppression for their sexuality. Mm. And so it makes me think, my God, what we're doing is incredibly important and incredibly relevant. Mm. It is still happening everywhere. And even though we're living in the post-Will and Grace era, mm. There's still work to be done.
It's amazing how many people sort of think it's all sorted, though.
Yeah, they definitely do. But it's really not.
No, it's really not. There's still a lot of violence, of course, which is a theme in the show, of course.
Yeah.
Have you sort of, in your own life, experienced some of the same struggles that your character does?
Well, do you know, this was the big part of that conversation I told you about that Douglas Hodgson I had the first afternoon. He asked me, what things about this play, about this script, are there that you relate to? Tell me some of the reasons why you think you're right to play this role. And I could literally go scene by scene and say, I lived that, I lived that, I lived that.
Mm.
I had the exact same conversations with my mother. God bless her, she has come leaps and bounds. She loves my partner, she loves the life that I lead. She has no more of the craziness and the worries that she had initially. But we had the same kind of knockdown, drag-out fights. The screaming,
wow.
Can you not understand this is who I am? That kind of screaming, fighting. All the way down to the most embarrassing memories, the being in a back room for the first time. I remember being 20 years old and going into a back room and holding onto my friend's hand saying, please don't let go. I will freak out if you let go of my hand back here. And him dragging on a cigarette so that I could see what was going on back there.
Oh, wow.
And moments later, I have no memory of anything except having sex anonymously in a back room for the first time at 20 years old. So, it's been a crazy life and a very mirroring life.
So you think it's a really accurate portrayal of a certain American day life?
Yeah, I really do. I mean, it's why it's been such a brilliant piece in our culture, because it absolutely reflects the reality of many of our lives. And the great thing is, every night you can hear people gasping when they connect with a moment.
Yeah.
When they hear something that their parents said to them, or a situation comes up that they lived through, you can hear them go, oh God, of course, and oh no. Yeah, I mean, you hear all that in the audience, and you know there's profound recognition going on.
Does it seem like it's mostly gay audiences that are coming, or is it a real mix?
It's certainly a high percentage, but it definitely is a mixed crowd, which is great. It gives us hope for, future of the show and transfer.
Mm.
Yeah.
And you've been with your own partner, is it 20 years, a long
20
time?
20 years.
And do you ever think of marriage? Or?
No.
No.
No. I mean, our relationship has gone through many, many different what do we call
them?
Stages,
ups
phases,
and downs.
It's
a roller coaster.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yes. So I don't think marriage is in the cards for us, but we certainly were just having a conversation this week saying we both believe in our hearts that we are destined to be partnered for eternity. And even if that means heading in different directions in the next few years, that doesn't mean that we're not connected on a soul level.
And tell us a bit about After Show as well.
Oh, wow, that has really taken off. It came together last, I think November was when we started it.
Mm.
And really, I just wanted an opportunity to get people from the television and film world into a club where we could sit and do something that felt like, to me, what the old-fashioned American variety shows were like. Okay. I remember as a kid watching the Dean Martin show, the Judy Garland show, the Perry Como show, all of these iconic, easy-listening singers. They used to get celebrities on who weren't necessarily singers. They were actors and directors and people who were high celebrity in the industry. And they'd come on and they'd interview and they'd talk and they'd do skits and they'd sing songs together. Even if one of them wasn't a singer, they'd still get up and do a duet. That kind of fun atmosphere where people feel like they get to know you and not see this professional persona. They get to see the people behind it. Yeah. So we decided to put together a night like that in the clubs and have it be after the theater audiences let out so that everybody could come, even the people who had just performed shows, could come and enjoy it. We started out having to beg and scramble around to see who we could get in there. It's reached the opposite point. We have
where
a list of people
to be on it,
who
right.
are wanting to come and join.
Yeah.
Last week we had a packed out house and lovely performers. We've got some great names coming up.
Who's on in July?
In July. Well, musically speaking, his name is Tony. He is the writer of this song. Do you remember, Why Do You Build Me Up?
Oh, Buttercup? Yes, yeah, Buttercup. Yeah, yeah.
He wrote that. He wrote Don't Give Up On Us, Baby.
Oh, yeah.
He wrote Last Night I Didn't Get to Sleep At All. All these old great hits. And I'm going to have him on to sing his song. I'm going to sing his song. I'm going to talk to David Soul and see if I can cajole him into coming down and doing his big hit from the 70s. So I think that's going to be great fun. We have a couple of actors coming in. We have some people from Benidorm. We've got some people who are doing shows here in the West End. So it's always a star-studded audience and a star-studded panel of people who come up. But the one thing you're guaranteed is you're going to hear kick-ass singing and kick-ass music. We have jazz musicians who come up. We had a comic last month.
Brilliant.
So, yeah, it's like an American variety show.
Yeah.
That we do from 10:45 till about 1 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
Every second Thursday
Whereabouts?
Of the month. At the Alley Cat, which is number 4 Denmark Street.
Okay.
It's the street right there by Tottenham
Court
Road
that's
with all
the
musical instruments.
Oh, yeah, that's a fun little street with all the guitar shops.
Yeah. It's really good fun. I encourage everyone to come down.
Brilliant. Okay, well, thanks, David.
You're welcome.
All the best with the rest of the run.
Oh, thank you very much.
So that was me talking to David Bedella, the star of Torch Song Trilogy, which is running until the 11th of August at the Menier Chocolate Factory. And check out menierchocolatefactory.com to go and buy your tickets.
He's lovely, isn't he?
Yeah, he's absolutely lovely.
I saw him in Rocky Horror Picture Show as Frankenfurter.
Oh, yes.
And he's quite sexy in a basque and heels.
Well, that's probably, I don't know. If I find that sexy, I might have made it.
I've never seen the Rocky Horror Show.
Well, ever?
Ever.
Have you seen the movie?
No.
Lucio's not really, like, he hasn't done things that a lot of gays have done, you know, other than, like,
well,
I've heard the soundtrack. I probably know most of the songs, but I've never seen it.
Do we have to, is it an initiation? Do you have to, do I have to sort of listen to
K.D.
Lang? I mean,
yes.
I have,
yes, you do. And all of those things.
Why are there so many rules? It's so hard being gay. It's so complex.
Quite famously, Lucio, last year at some point, amongst our friends, it's quite famous that Lucio turned to someone at some point and went, did you know that Liza Minnelli is Judy Garland's daughter? And everybody was like, I mean, he had just found it out, and it was like, he thought he was sharing this news with everyone. So, but anyway, no, that's good. That's why we like him.
We do some news.
Let's do some news.
Homo
Lab.
Homo
Lab.
All right, so this is some news courtesy of our friends at Gay Star News. They were, you may have seen them around the London Pride Parade if you're around. They had an Alfa Romeo that they were tooling around Soho in and giving out Gay Star News merchandise. So if you saw them, that was super lovely. I'm going to start with one thing. On the very day that it was Gay Pride here in London, it was also the Pride Parade in St. Petersburg. Now, we talked a lot about this on Homo Lab and how Russia is just not very down with their Gay Pride parades, you know? And they recently, didn't they ban it for like 100 years or something?
Yeah.
Russia banned Gay Pride for 100
years.
I
think it's 1,000.
Millennium.
Well, yeah, the organizers, it was kind of like Scientology, where you have to sign that billion-year contract to be a Scientologist. Well, they had actually, the organizers of the St. Petersburg Day Parade, Pride Parade, sorry, I don't know what it's called. Let's just call it St. Petersburg Pride. They had actually sought out applications to do this and had approved the route, and it had kind of been provisionally granted to them, and then the day before it was meant to happen, the authorities kind of took away the permit again. So it was only their third one that they've had, and each one has been marred. This one, they were having two pickets. They arrested, 3 people were arrested, 5 more were detained. 2 days later, they were still being detained, and it just goes to show you, back to what we were saying earlier, that there all of these struggles are still really real for
absolutely.
A lot of people around the world. And, it's one thing for us to not have a dance stage in Golden Square in central London and to not be able to use our fabulous floats that we've been working on forever. But one of the things we need to remember is that around the world, people are doing this because they just want to live their lives. They don't need to necessarily have speakers blaring out Kylie to have their parade. They just want to be able to love who they love. And it's just a nice reminder of why I think it was good that London Pride kind of went back to its roots, and that we should remember our our fellow lesbian and gay and bisexual transgendered friends all around the world that are fighting for that. So don't forget that. That's all I wanted to say.
Absolutely.
What do you have in terms of like changing your sexuality?
Oh, goodness. Well, the Exodus International president, the Exodus being this organization that claimed to be able to cure gay people.
Pray the gay away.
They have claimed to be able to cure that. Now, the president, Alan Chambers, has actually admitted that sexual orientation change is impossible. And this is quite interesting because I read a big article by Ivan Massow in the Evening Standard on Friday, and he'd actually been to one of their conferences and to all the sort of celibacy workshops and things with a load of other gay men who wanted to change. I mean, Ivan just wanted to go and find out about it.
Yeah.
And so he'd written this whole article about his experience there and what it was like and how, you know, in some ways he could see they were trying to provide something for these men who desperately wanted to change. They needed to have somewhere to go. But
well, yeah, because there are some people that are genuinely troubled by
genuinely
it. Genuinely
troubled.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was just making them feel pretty awful. And a lot of the workshops seemed to be emphasising celibacy and being single and flagging that up as a possible lifestyle choice, which just seemed to be a whole road to a lot of loneliness, really. And what was interesting was Ivan was saying that at night they were sort of locked into their rooms, and he went on Grindr, and of course that was going mad with loads of people all in the same building.
0 meters away.
Yeah, exactly, all in their little locked rooms. But I thought if they're locked into their bedrooms, wouldn't that be a fire hazard? What would happen if there
was
a fire?
Yeah, surely. Like, how do you
die?
Get out?
I know. I'm quite concerned.
about their health and safety.
About their health and safety. Yes. I'm going to come down on them like the GLA did on Pride, you know. But I would suggest perhaps if you wanted to become straight, you could try a backward roll. Because, of course, famously, that guy on BBC Three, he woke up gay after trying a forward roll.
You should start your own, like, rehabilitation program.
Yes.
You'd
it,
make
it'd
millions.
Just be an aerobics class.
It's great because it doesn't involve religion, you know. And you can get fit while doing it.
Yeah. But it's interesting to... I wonder what will happen to Exodus now. Now, many of their sort of heads and sort of main people there have now admitted that there is no cure. So are they going to carry on just telling people that you can't be cured but you've got to be alone?
Maybe loneliness international.
Yeah,
loneliness and celibacy international. But you know, it's terrible. I mean, I'm glad that they realised it finally, obviously, and most, you know, right-minded people realised this long ago. So that's great that this has happened, but what about the years and years of people that have like had their whole lives fucked up because
absolutely.
Of this, you know, and their minds are completely muddled with what is going, you know, I think they've caused so much damage. There's no forgiveness there for me.
No.
Well, talking of messing up people's minds, we turn to the Catholic Church.
Okay.
Are you Catholic?
No.
Were you raised Catholic or?
No. I mean, it's interesting, actually. My family were all Methodists and then became Quakers.
Oh, we went to a Quaker meeting.
Yeah, and my mum had a Quaker funeral, which was really lovely.
Well, we're down with the Quakers.
They're
gay
friendly.
Do you still go Quaker?
No, I mean, I'm not really religious in any way, but, I thought it was nice when my parents got interested in Quakerism and my auntie and uncle, because I could sort of relate to where they were coming from.
You know Timberlina?
The drag
performer Timberlina we've had on this, and I do bingo with every Monday. His parents were Quakers, so he was raised in a Quaker tradition.
My friend Abby at uni was a Quaker.
There we go. We all know Quakers and we like them. So what were you saying, Lucho? Sorry.
What's the news story? Cardinal Keith O'Brien, he's the leader of the Catholic Church in Scotland. He has declared war on gay marriage.
Oh my God.
Wars.
Now, you might remember earlier on, he compared legalising gay marriage to bringing back slavery. He's revealed in a strongly worded letter is going to be read out in Scottish churches, Catholic churches, on the 26th of August. And he's going to urge Catholics to donate money to help fund the £100,000 advertising campaign against the Scottish government's plans to introduce equal marriage. And he said, marriage is under threat and politicians need to know the Catholic Church will bear any burden to meet the cost of its defence.
Any burden.
Up to £100,000. that's a lot of money for the Catholic Church.
Sure, they could be using their money for such better things.
Well, I mean, the thing is, surely if they if that, well, yes, of course they could. I mean, I looked online, Save the Children claimed that one in five children in Scotland live in poverty. So you'd think that a war on poverty would be more within Jesus' teachings than a war on love. But let's not get into that. I think, I mean, really, if the Catholic Church is so committed to fighting, to a war on gay marriage, why are they asking their parishioners for the money in the middle of a recession? I mean, the church has enough money that it could easily raise over £100,000 to fund its own campaign. So,
because they're ridiculous.
Oh, you know, they've got to pay for incense and Pope mobiles.
Well, quality incense is quite expensive, to be fair.
Have you tried sourcing some recently?
Yeah, you know, you can get your cheap stuff. So is that our news then?
It is.
That's our news. Okay. Thanks so much to Gay Star News.
Indeed.
Ho Mo
Lab.
Ho Mo
Lab. So thanks very much to all the people that have got in touch with us on Twitter. It's at Homo Lab if you would like to follow us or if you'd like to send us a message. Puzzle the Cheetah says, I love the podcast and considering becoming gay for you guys.
Oh, wow, we've converted one.
Thank you very much. Right. We're kind of the opposite.
We're the opposite to Exodus. We're inter us.
Kevin Hall has followed us. Marcel Yves Lausier has followed us. Adam says, just discovered Homo Lab, described as the UK's new podcast for homos, their friends and fans, full of swank, spit and sawdust. Love you guys. Gareth says, why weren't Homo Lab part of the official Pride procession? He's aimed that at you, Balaam.
That's a good point, you know. Why weren't we? Because, well...
Three people, it's not really.
Yeah, me, Lucio and Amy marching down the street, and Rosie. It's probably not going to make quite the impact, but we were there, and that's the important thing.
A few other people have followed us. Adam at My Gay Travels, Gay Ski Week, Alexander Smith, and African Burial Grounds.
Oh, they followed me recently as well.
I feel left out. They've not followed me.
Well.
I'm going to follow them instead. we are at Homo Lab. Thank you to all of our new followers and for spreading the word. And that's
are you
going to
come back next week?
Yeah,
are you horrified?
Back. Yeah, yeah. Unless the African burial ground get me.
Yes, and thanks to our friends at Soho Theatre Cafe. We're recording this week, but their kitchen was closed, so we just had to drink water.
We couldn't have any soup.
No, but always nice to be here. And it look outside, you guys. It looks like it's literally the apocalypse.
Oh, no.
Oh.
Summertime.
Summertime.
Wow. Can I just plug my... I'm doing
oh,
my
yeah,
show.
What are you doing? Plug it.
I'm doing How Not to Make It in Britpop, which is my storytelling show about when I was trying to make it as a musician, and I sing some of my old songs I had out on my old album when I was an earnest lesbian folk singer, but tell the story of my band, and I get out my old photos and some crazy fan letters and lots of fun stuff.
But that sounds cool. Where is that?
I'm doing that on the 10th, which is Tuesday, at the Hob opposite Forest Hill Railway Station, but it's also going to be on at Camden Fringe in Edinburgh as well.
Oh, cool. Well, what's your website if people want to see it?
RosieWilby.com.
There you go. All right, guys, have a lovely week. Apparently, it's supposed to get really cold this week, but it's supposed to stop raining, so it's always.
We've got Homo Lab weather, brought to you by Baylor,
and
our weather correspondent.
Eco ponchos at the ready.
Yeah, exactly. We will see you guys next week. Bye.
Homo
Lab.
Homo.